I talk a lot about selling services in the productivity space, but I got thinking, what can we learn from those that consult there now? Daniel C., who's the author of Spacemaker, joins me on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. So where in Australia are you calling in from?
I'm from Hobart, Tasmania. So if you haven't heard of that, we're the island at the bottom of Australia, literally as far away from you as I can get. You may have heard of the Tassie Devil from like Looney Tune cartoons if you watch too much TV.
I have played with the globe and we are almost exactly opposite in terms of location on the planet. So this is going to be good fun. Now I'm going to start with the headline. Why do you think it's important to examine our relationship with the online world?
Yeah, great question. We don't normally think about our relationship with tech as a relationship, but I think it is. I think we have loves and longings that we express through our devices. We feel connected with them. I mean, I just remember one moment where I was in bed with my wife. I won't get too intimate, but you know, she was there playing Candy Crush and I was scanning email and I realized this is what we do each night. And I'm having a relationship with my phone more than my wife. And that was a wake-up call. I'm like, oh yeah, we have a relationship. And sometimes it's healthy, sometimes it's codependent, but it's good to examine our beliefs and our relationship with tech in order to think about how we want to use it and how much we want it to impact our life in positive and negative ways.
Now, you've coined that in a personal relationship, which I definitely would agree with. But I think that also translates in the business world, the way an organization has a relationship with tech. Could you elaborate a little bit of the way you think about it in a business context?
Yeah, absolutely. So we all have stories and ways of seeing technology. We don't think about it like that because, you know, in Western culture, we're just soaked in tech and we know that the solution to most things is to head to tech first. And yet, actually, that's not the same in other countries and other organizations. When it comes to, you know, individual companies or individual businesses, we approach technology according to our stories, our beliefs. And obviously we do have a relationship in the sense of we need it. We need tech to do all the functions that we use. And sometimes we use that well, sometimes we don't.
You spend time working with customers and working with people to enhance that relationship. Tell me a little bit about what you spend your time doing.
Yeah. So look, I used to be a physiotherapist. That was my original career. And then I moved into management and project management. And I started to look around and realize that the way we work, both using technology, but just generally the way we work is really important. And I became passionate about productivity. You can't study to be a productivity expert or a productivity consultant, but I was always fairly organized. And I just started reading a lot of research. It started with email, actually. How do you use email well and what's the research say? And then how do you use to-do lists? And then, you know, how do you use calendars? And eventually how do you use different software and how do you integrate it? And I ended up becoming, I suppose, a productivity expert, training people around me and trying to help them think about how they work, why they work, and how to shape their habits around their greater purpose. Eventually I started a business around that. And so that's where I began.
Now, you've said a couple of things I want to ask about, so I'm going to dive into the first one that jumps to mind. So tell me a little bit then about how you're supposed to use email. I thought we always just sort of knew how to use email.
That was a classic, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I used to be a physiotherapist, so I spent 4 years studying anatomy and physiology and, you know, all these ologies. And then I did postgraduate study and I did nearly a decade of treating patients. And then I became a manager. I managed like 17 health sites. I had, you know, lots of staff. And I realized I was spending, what, 3, sometimes 4 hours a day on this tool called Microsoft Outlook. And no one had given me a single moment of training, either in how to use the tool or how to use it in a high volume email environment. And it was like literally giving the keys to a 16-year-old and going, hey, good luck. And that's how it works, you know. And what I realized is actually there's no other area in life where you would spend, what, a third or even half of your time on a particular device or a tool and not train people in a normal, healthy workplace. And yeah, that's what we do with email. And the other thing I realized is you can learn how to use the technical aspects of Microsoft, you know, how to use quick steps, how to use categories and rules. And that's helpful and it's very important. But actually, it's the habits and practices you put behind email that actually make a difference. And that's my physiotherapy training, because it's the human habits and the human behaviors that often really impact how well we do things from a productivity perspective. So you need the tech, but you also need to reflect on why and how you do it. So I'm an inbox zero guy. I set up action reading waiting folders. I've turned off notifications. I batch task, and I also I have times where I don't have email on and I don't see what's happening so I can focus. And then I have times where I process top to bottom using 2-minute rule. You know, I process it well. All of that's made a huge difference to help untether me from constant distraction and yet still be responsive to email. But that's not about the tech. That's about habits and about understanding human behavior and how to undistract yourself from too much technology as you use email.
It's funny because I'm actually also an inbox zero kind of person. Mine's a bit of a custom solution to it because nobody taught me, right? I learned that I needed to do that on mine. So how do you teach? Do you teach in groups individually? Like, how does that work from an education perspective?
Yeah. So my business actually began with a course that I ran, and I literally said, look, I've got no real skills, but I know a lot about email. Can I train someone? And the provider said, if you can get 8 to 10 people, we'll say yes. And I got 8 people. And then Email Ninja was born. Now I've got 20,000 people online as students in the US. So, I mean, it's gone a lot of places. But I basically start with a few paradigms. I teach people to think about their inbox like a letterbox. And, you know, the idea that you wouldn't work from your letterbox, your postbox at home. And yet we work from the electronic postbox, and we have actions and reading and waiting and stuff we don't know what to do. It's all in there and it becomes a mess. And so we've got to think differently about the idea that the inbox is a place where stuff comes in, you process it, and you put it into workflows. Then you need to set up your workflows. So how can you actually have a process for managing actions, for delegated tasks, etc.? And how do you streamline your archive so that it's as simple and fast as possible? So we call that a killer archive. It's a process of the thinking, the organizing, and then the big bit, the half the course is the habits or the disciplines, and they're the disciplines of processing using healthy habits. And I teach them based on the research, particularly with the aim of getting people to learn to single task rather than just constantly scan their inbox and be distracted all through the day. And that's the game changer. If you can untether yourself from allowing email to dictate the texture of every moment in the day and setting your priorities constantly, then you become like ridiculously more productive because you can determine what you want to do.
Now, how do you think about it from a course and an approach perspective? Is around, because we dove right into a tool, which where tech people are always likely to do, but I could also look at it from kind of a process perspective. What's your development for where to dive in and help orgs pull this all together? What's the starting point?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a tech person, but I do like Patrick Lencioni's type models of organizational health, which is actually more about teams and people. But I think there's probably a lot of similarities in terms of how you would set up technology and impact it, because he really would say you've got to work at the individual level, obviously, and change people's personal skills and help them to know how to use, in your case, tech tools. In his case, you'd have interpersonal disciplines and behaviors. But from the individual, then obviously you need to form teams, and then you need to form the systems that actually support those teams. And I think it's probably fairly similar. You need to be able to change. You need to be able to train individuals to use software well. You need to be able to build teams who understand their ways of working, and so they're using similar tools and integrating them in a helpful way. And then at a systems level, obviously, you need all the systems that support the types of behaviors you want and to reduce the barriers to things that just don't need to be there. I have no idea if that connects, but that's the way I see it from a productivity perspective. I work at all levels.
No, it makes perfect sense. Now, I'm kind of fascinated. You've got a background, as you mentioned, in physiotherapy, including you did clinical services in a hospital. Now, help for those of us that don't know really what that space is, what is physiotherapy and how are you then taking what that is and applying it here?
Yeah. So look, physiotherapy is a very broad thing. You can be in hospitals, you know, working with COVID-19 patients and sucking sputum out of like ventilators, or you can be, you know, doing the sports type physio with, you know, elite athletes. So there's a lot of things you can do, but essentially it's about looking at the human body, understanding it deeply, recognizing common pathologies or ways in which the body, I suppose, experiences pain or dysfunction, and then giving solutions to people. But a lot of it requires that you help people help themselves, essentially. Whether it's an older person in rehab and they've had a stroke and you're helping them learn to move by practicing that movement, or whether it be, you know, you go to the typical physiotherapist with a sore back and they help you, but then they teach you what to do to strengthen yourself and to walk well. Where that fits very nicely with productivity is that essentially you can give someone all the right advice and they don't do it. I mean, the research is a classic. I think it's about 20-30% of people who are prescribed medications and fill them out don't take their medications. I read, what was it? The 12 Rules of Life, and Jordan Peterson talks about how we're more likely to give our dogs and animals their pills on a regular basis than give ourselves our own pills, which says something about how we value ourselves. And so what I'm trying to say is you can give the right advice and people won't do it. You've got to find intrinsic motivators and drivers and shift people's habits in order to get the changes you need. So when it comes to physiotherapy, I would help people to think about why they wanted to improve and how it would help their life and how they could do it in a way that would motivate them on a regular basis to reduce the change. When it comes to email, you know, I do the same thing. I get people to write down exactly what they'll do in the course. I give them a little ninja figurine, like literally a ninja instead of a certificate, and they don't get to stand it up until they get to zero. So we, you know, get them to commit. I use a whole lot of habit change methodologies to try to bring about technological or productivity behavior change, because that's where the wins are. Does that make sense?
It does. You obviously are thinking of this very much, you know, in that clinical and research angle. What's the research that's most surprised you about this whole productivity space?
The research. I think it's simply just how much multitasking is killing our brains and our productivity. I like the work of Johan Hari. He summarizes a lot of the research as well in Stolen Focus. And my book, Space Maker, looks at it from a psychological perspective and then gets very practical. But essentially, we are becoming a very fractured society in terms of our focus. Notifications, the design of apps through big tech, the cultural stories we have. There's a whole lot of reasons, but we are losing our ability to have deep work and to focus in a really concentrated way. We're struggling to enjoy silence and self-reflection where we can determine what our values are, what our beliefs are, and where we're meant to head as individuals or as business owners. So we're struggling with that deep strategic work. And then when we actually know what we want to do, we're struggling with the practical habits of sticking to those things because we're doing this and this and this and this and this, and technology is forming us in a way that reduces our attention. I was having a chat with one of my son's friends just yesterday, and he's 10 years old. He's got his phone and his games and everything else. And kids' brains are different than adult brains in that way. But I said, "Oh, what movies do you like?" Just trying to create conversation. He said, "Oh, I don't have the attention span for movies anymore. You know, I watch YouTube videos and play games instead." And I remember, and there was no sense of that was an unusual thing. It's just the way it was. And I remember thinking, wow, we used to watch movies as our way of distracting ourselves from like books and concentrated work. And yet now movies are too hard to watch and we need to reduce our attention to something smaller. And I think that is what I'm seeing in the research again and again for adults.
Well, it makes me sad as a moviegoer to hear people not enjoying it in the same way. Now, you have written a book, and I actually want to, you know, I don't want you to reveal all of the secrets of it, but tell me a little bit about sort of what inspired you to work on the book Spacemaker.
Yeah. So look, I wrote an article about why I turn off technology a day a week. So I have, I suppose I'd call it a digital Sabbath now, but it was the reason I did that is because I realized that I use tech all the time. I'm on tech, you know, I'm online probably 12 hours a day for business. And the only way I could have a day of not working was to re-examine how I use technology. And I realized from the research that my brain can't tell the difference between Outlook and Instagram, in the sense that if I'm swiping screens and using the internet for work and then doing the same thing for rest, just using different apps and different software, it's actually not resting my brain and it's not giving me that kind of soul nourishment that I need. So I turned off my tech. And then everyone was interested. This was 7 years ago because no one was talking about tech overuse back then. And I thought, well, there's a book in this. So I thought I'd write a 20-page ebook about how to disconnect practically, you know, for a day, in small habits, in big habits. But I quickly realized that the reason my executive leaders and clients that I coach can't turn off their devices, even at the start and end of the day, for example, or to have a digital-free meal, isn't because they don't know how to turn off their device. We all know how to do that, right? There's a different story. There's a different reason. And it comes down to our beliefs, our paradigms, and the design of tech itself and how it's changing our brain from a neuroplasticity perspective. So I wrote a book. It took me 7 years to research. What is the story and the paradigm and the changes that are happening in our brain that we need to understand? Because if you don't change your tech relationship and your tech story, you can't change your tech habits. And when I say tech habits, I'm not saying reduce tech or get rid of tech. I love tech. But I'm saying that if you are always on tech, if you can never disconnect, if you can't make space away from technology, well, then it will impact and reduce your ability to know yourself deeply, to have in-person relationships, to have focus and to have a soul rest and to explore the beauty of life beyond the screen. But it begins with our tech relationship before the tech habits.
So I can hear the objection to that from my listeners right away, right? These are guys that are sitting there on call. They're dealing with help desk requests and support tickets that are coming in. And they're saying, but I've got to be bound to my tech. I'm on call. I'm unavailable. What would you tell them to that objection to thinking this way?
Yeah, and a great question. Look, I did talk about the black belt kind of ninja habit first, which was to turn off your tech for a full day a week. I know that won't work for everyone. That is the one that has been the hardest for me to learn. There are a lot smaller habits like having a tech-free meal with your family, for example, or charging your phone outside of your bedroom so you can start and end the day with some space, or having some exercise where you don't have, you know, ear pods on and listening to podcasts, except for yours, of course, but where you're actually learning to think your own thoughts rather than filling your mind with other people's thoughts. So there's lots of small habits that you can start with. But in terms of the objection, I really do think that some of our hyperactivity or our need to constantly be responding is self-driven and it's not necessarily a reality. There's certainly a demand and an expectation from clients, for example, that you do respond quickly. But even as a business, you can think about how can I make space as a company or as a team to support each other. So one example would be I worked with an IT group where they all decided, okay, we're IT help desk, we're all ticketing, we're all frantic, but we need some space to fix things, to deal with legacy issues, to reflect on how we can improve our ways of working, our team formation, our systems. And unless we do that, we're just running to standstill, always living that urgent reactive space. And so they said, how do we carve out, let's say, 2 to 3 hours once or twice a week for each person to actually do deep work outside of that reactive space? And so they backed each other. So what they said is, okay, Tuesday between 10 and 12 is Tony's time where he has space to work and think and concentrate outside of that reactive churn. So we'll cover him when someone comes in or when someone phones or emails, well, someone else will cover him for that. And then he will cover that same person again on Thursday between 10 and 12. And they found that just having those small gaps of space as a team was incredibly valuable and transformed their environment from never solving the big problems to actually solving them and then still responding. I think that works as a team. I definitely think it works as an individual.
Yeah, you hit on a lot of that about thinking about it in business versus an individual. And that's funny because my household, we have some of the same rules. We have no televisions in our bedroom. My wife and I, we don't charge our phones there. There is a tablet there in there, but it's only for the home automation and the newspaper. It doesn't have any of the no messaging, nothing along those lines. And actually on the professional side, I'm a big believer in like Apple's focus modes, and I have different modes and I can set them for, you know, the kinds of tasks I'm doing. And so I then turn off interruptions and that kind of stuff. Daniel, if your book is Spacemaker, How to Unplug, Unwind, and Think Clearly in the Digital Age, if people are interested in learning more, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. I'm at spacemakers.com.au. The AU is for Australia, obviously. So yeah, I do train teams. We've got another course actually, emailninja.com.au is where you can get 3 videos about how to set up your inbox, and feel free to get the course online if you're interested as well. The last thing is I have another book, Raising Tech Healthy Humans. So if you're a parent with young kids, so preteens and maybe younger than that, and are thinking about how might I help them with healthy tech habits, then that's that book as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining me today.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Dave.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSPradio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.